Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 251 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on how can your relationship flourish according to research? And it is Friday, the 2nd of February 2024, as I record this. So today's episode is definitely a rather fun one, because I always like to change things up on the podcast every so often and focus on relationships from time to time, because they're fun. Social psychology does actually have some quite good research, and I think compared to other areas of psychology, even in mental health, I think we can apply this to our everyday life a bit more from time to time. So that's always really nice. And come on, it's fun because we get to talk about relationships, love, and all that sort of stuff, really. And today's podcast episode does actually focus and actually give us quite a few lessons that we can all apply to our lives, which is always useful. So you've got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest, and the first one is very apt for February. Failed your New Year's resolutions already? Maybe blame your genes. If your friends are asking about New Year's resolutions that have already failed by the wayside, today we are bringing you an ease out. According to the current research, your chances of resisting temptation are affected by your genetic makeup. Dozens of studies have explored how much of a role genes play in explaining why some people have excellent self-control, whilst others really struggle to overcome impulses and temptations. But this, past body of the work, has produced a wide range of results, making it difficult to draw any firm conclusions. Note the authors of a new paper in Neuroscience and Behavioural Reviews. Now, Williams at the Free University of Amsterdam and their colleagues report the results of a major meta-analysis of 31 papers in this field, all on groups of identical twins, fraternal twins, or both. The 31 papers include more than 30,000 individual twins in total, and suggest that 60% of their ability in self-control behaviour between any two people is down to their genes, though exactly which genes is yet to be asserted. So I always quite love twin research because I think they're a lot of fun. I think you can do some quite fascinating stuff with twins and genetics, and I just think that, right, and for some reason I just think that twin studies are really, really fun. Of course, it's way beyond my expertise, way beyond what I would ever want to be involved in, because biological psychology, let alone research, is not really my cup of tea, and I just don't really want to do it. But I think that the results can be really interesting. Of course, you've always got the argument that just because these work on twins, does it always shift to non-twins and the general population? I'm not really sure how valid that argument is, but I've heard about it quite a lot from different sources. So maybe it's just something to think about. When it comes to our self-control behaviour, and it's like genetics, I always think that it's a good example that a behaviour is always a different amount of genetics and in environmental factors. For example, like around 60% of this their variability in self-control is genetic, but that still leaves 40% that's down to you. So you can still have a reasonably large impact in your own self-control behavior. Okay, so I think that's just something to think about. Try if you really do want to with this temptation. But of course, that's always a lot easier said than done. So the second one is, survival of the fittest isn't just for organisms. Charles Darwin likened the evolution of a language to the evolution of an organism. The survival and representation of certain favoured words in the struggle for existence in natural selection, he wrote in The Descent of Man. Though his thoughts on language are slightly less well known than his other work, some modern researchers do a language in the same way, arguing that certain words outcompete others and are more likely to stand the test of time. But what makes these words fitter than others? The answer, according to a new study in PNAS, lies at least partly in the way our brains learn and process words. And I will just read the final two paragraphs from the BPS website. The consistency between the results from the first and second part of the study is clear. Together, the researchers write, these two sets of findings provide evidence that language undergoes cognitive selection for words that are easier to process, recall, and reproduce. Of course, languages do also develop and expand. Changing social, emotional, and technological conditions, such as the development of social media, leads us to coin new words. So too does the drive to find new ways to express age-old ideas and feelings, which can manifest as a new in-group slang. Open quote. These new words may replenish the vocabulary that cognitive selection codes in times of increasing competition. Close quote. The researchers write, but whether or not they survive in the long run may depend at least partly on the same fundamental cognitive factors. Our environment may change, but as the researchers write, close the quote, the mind remains relatively stable. Close the quote. So I think this is definitely quite an interesting idea, because if you do look at language, and if you look at some of the really weird, and I mean there are some weird words that we used to say, because on my fictional Facebook page, for quite a lot of like last year, I was doing what I call Weird Word Wednesday, which I might actually start again, because I did quite enjoy it, and it was so easy to like schedule that. And like, we are aware that language does change over generations, or to be honest, like even over years, and different generations do create and cut out like new language. So for example, me and my great aunt, we were talking the other night, and she used the word courted, and I just couldn't believe that she used the word courting. I was like, who says that anymore? And yeah, so I really, really hope that the word courting really does fade out of human language. I think it's a terrible word, and I really don't like it. Like, I hate that word with such a passion, because it's so old-fashioned, and courting, really do hate that word. So language does change, though. And even though we know this, and I think we can see this in everyday life like over the years though, we never actually stop and we never think about why does it change. So it's quite good to learn about this Psychology News article that helps to explain it. So that I think is always useful to know. And come on, it is quite interesting. So the final one is, gravity or lack of it may affect decision making. The countdown to Mars is on. According to current timelines, astronauts could be heading to the red planet as soon as the 2030s, and the race is on to fill the many gaps in our knowledge about how the journey is likely to affect them. both physically and mentally. Despite being perhaps the biggest physical difference between Earth and space in environment, the impact that microgravity might have on an astronaut's decision-making is one area that has received relatively little investigation. Preliminary research in a scientific report reveals that in microgravity, decision-making does indeed appear to change, making floating participants more confident in their judgment about whether or not a drone shown a stimuli would a crash then and they would be on a terra firma. Replication and further investigations are needed to confirm these findings, but they do pose important questions about the extent to which space in environment could cognitively affect crows. So this is actually a great one, and this is actually one that I'm actually quite excited about now, because I saw the headline and I didn't think too much of it when I first got the research digest up, but now I'm actually quite excited about this, mainly for two reasons. So firstly, because I'm a science fiction writer, I always quite enjoy like space exploration and that sort of stuff. And I always think that it's quite interesting to see how a researcher can be used in a science fiction setting. So I might try that from like time to time. But also another reason why this is interesting is because my final year of my undergrad, I did a brilliant module, I say sarcastically, called Cognition in Action. Now, I am not a cognitive psychology person, so this module was always going to be a bit hard, but there was an entire lecture on gravity and the stimulus system. Basically, it's how does gravity impact our cognitive processes, and it's quite an interesting one, and it's definitely important, especially as the space race basically restarts and it continues. So definitely got to focus on this. We've got to focus on how does our cognitive stuff change. Will it change? So and if you look at some of the current research, then I definitely think that it's definitely worth a read, and you can actually learn quite a lot. For example, the only one that jumps out at me is a group of astronauts. I think they were cosmonauts because they were Russian. I think they flew up to the, not the International Space Station, but they went on this like shuttle, and they kept complaining of a really bad smell, and they hated this smell. It was so bad that they had to cancel the mission early. So like whoever these astronauts belong to, they then had to spend so much money getting them back and actually investigating this smell. But the thing was, there was no smell. There was no strange smell. There was nothing like. This was just a trick of the mind. So I can't remember the details or what it was actually called, but I know that that's happened. It'd definitely be interesting to see what future research brings. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the person update. So we're moving on to the person update. So this week has been really good and very productive and just insanely busy, like, to be honest, for different like business pieces. But when it comes to like psychology related stuff, statistics really well. And I think I've said this on the podcast before, but well, I'm definitely finding that like this term statistics is actually like a lot more interesting, because this week we were talking about item response theory, and that was actually quite interesting, because this week I've also been working on my research survey and actually like getting like that done. So I had to come up with a bunch of statements, items and that sort of like stuff, so it was really useful to actually learn about item response theory and the different factors that I needed to like consider. So very useful time in that, and time though, and I'm actually really grateful like for that lecture. So, well, besides from the research end of Eli, the statistics I've just been out a lot and like socializing, which has actually been like a really nice change though. And I do have to keep this person update quite short because I'm going out tonight and to be honest, I'm leaving in about an hour. So I need to like hurry up here. So as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me at connorwhiteley@connorwhiteley.net. You can always leave a comment on the show notes at connorwhiteley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet on Twitter @SciFiWhiteley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And today's episode has been sponsored by Psychology of Relationships, the social psychology of friendships, romantic relationships, and more. So the reason why this is a great sponsor for today's episode is because this book clearly and easily lays out the biological, psychological, and the social reasons for why relationships form, be them romantic relationships or friendships. And then it also talks about, which is always a popular psychology chapter, and then it also talks about my absolute favourite topic, which includes one of my favourite psychology models, models by Duck and someone, which is about why relationships change and end. And then the book also talks about the theories of like sexuality, homosexuality, and like why do both of those things happen, before talking about pro-social behaviour like bystanderism. So but this book's always like packed full of like great information. It's always really popular and I always get tons of like good emails about it, praising it. So with that is Psychology of Relationships, the Social Psychology of Friendships, Romantic Relationships and more. Available from all major ebook retailers, and you can get the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, local bookstore or local library if you request it. And you can also get it as an AI audiobook at selected audiobook retailers like Kobo, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Spotify, and selected library assistants like Overdrive, Baker & Taylor, and Bibliotheca. So whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons, because your support shows that you like the show and that you want it to continue. So if you want to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, now you can at patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So that's enough for the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about how can a relationship flourish according to research. So this is a really like useful podcast episode and it's a lot of fun. So let's dive into it. Why is it important to learn about relationship flourishing? So I fully admit that whilst I've never been in a relationship or dated, I want to look at this topic because I'm writing a blog post for this episode during the day, and then tonight I'm going to a fun social event where I might make some new friends or even meet someone, and it's always fun to look at anyway. Therefore, it's important that we all understand the reasons how and why relationships can flourish, so we can bring new life into our romantic relationships if they're starting to feel like a bit of a grind, as well as if we start to feel that our relationships aren't exciting anymore and we're continuing the same sense of sameness without anything new or exciting. In addition, learning about relationships gives us a chance for self-growth and connecting with our partner at a deeper level. Halford and all, 2023, addressing the problems of relationship flourishing. The study we'll be focusing on in this podcast episode is Halford and all, 2023, because the researchers pointed out that over time there have been larger changes in what's considered a good, happy, long-term relationship. Do you assume in the past couples have been happy to simply be loved by the other and meeting each other's psychological needs? Whereas in these modern times, with social media and globalization happening, couples are beginning to realize that self-actualization is important too in relationships because they've been exposed to these messages. Here's a quote from the study that highlights this point even more. Open quote. Increasing aspirations for relationship quality are evident in changing reasons for divorce. Close quote. And that comes from page 156. And what makes this quote interesting is that it is the feeling of growing apart that is the main cause for divorce in a sort of severe marital problems. Personally, I think that this is rather interesting because it is both for what you would and wouldn't expect to be the main cause for divorce. Since whenever I think about relationship breakdown, I always think about severe problems in a relationship, but I don't often think about growing apart as a reason. Therefore, this does remind us how important it is to make sure that we don't grow apart from our partners. As a result, the researchers are wanting to tackle these feelings of growing apart in couples by allowing a couple to flourish by targeting feelings of personal happiness and growth and enhancement. This would allow the couple to experience growth, resilience, as well as intimacy. In addition, Halfords and All 2023 wanted to validate the method that they've developed over the years to revive these flatlining relationships. What are the six elements of relationship education? Now, interestingly, Halfords and All propose that couples don't need to spend years in therapy to develop a high-quality relationship. Instead, they need to follow a very specific curriculum for about 12 to 18 hours in the comfort of their own home. Thankfully, this means that couples can do this regardless of their location, even if they have no local couples therapists. And yes, I will fully admit, when I first read that they want you to do this for 12 to 18 hours, I was shocked because that is a lot of commitment. But then I was thinking about it, if you think about this in terms of therapy, it's actually not a lot of difference. So that's just something that's useful to think about. So the six components of their relationship education program are as follows. Relationship self-change. This is where the couple learns about the value of a goal setting, why self-change is important to relationship growth, and the commitment to relationship enhancement. Communication. Here the couple learns about how to effectively communicate in relationships, and they evaluate their own communication skills. Caring and intimacy. In the first component, they learn about the importance of expressing social support, affection, and positive shared activities. Then they review their current affection, their engagement in shared activities, and their support for their partner. Managing differences. Notice that the couple reviews the positive effects of differences on the relationship and effective conflict management. Sexuality. Penultimately, they learn about common myths about sexual expression as well as assess their current sexual behaviour in the relationship. Management of life changes. Finally, the couple learn about the impact of a life event on the relationship, and they assess what likely life events, that's been quite a few times to say, their experience and their effects before reviewing how to maintain a focus on the relationship in a busy life. Overall, I think on paper they sound a little dry, but in reality these are all really important areas. For example, we know that communication is beyond critical in relationships because I know from personal experience that effective communication in any relationship is important. And if a good communication isn't developed, then bad things can and will happen, including the breakdown of a friendship and whatnot. In addition, I think as great as learning concepts and about relationships are, it is critical that couples actually focus on their own relationship through the reviewing and self-assessment. This is important because it allows couples to apply what they've learned and how to improve their relationship in the future. Of course, this is probably really hard and not ideal, but it is important, and there will probably be some uncomfortable situations from time to time. But again, this is why good communication is important. Furthermore, the paper talks a lot about how the authors use statistical models to support their conclusions. The sample was good, and I don't see any glaringly bad problems. And because that's all proper methodology content, I'm actually going to skip over that stuff. But I will mention that this is a small soapbox of mine. I think 26 couples might have been a slightly too small a sample, and I would have preferred over 30 couples. And the mean age was 34, meaning we can't really say with empirical evidence that this method works for younger couples or couples over 50. But that isn't really the point of this particular study, and the method does work for these couples. How can we use relationship education in our own lives? If we take a step back from the paper and focus on the lessons it can teach us, then there is a lot this study can teach us for our own relationships. Firstly, I've mentioned there are six areas of relationship education, and I think even the brief summary of each section can give you a lot of useful prompts to think about in your relationship. For example, maybe tonight, you and your partner should think about your current levels of affection towards each other, in engagement in shared activities and the like. Could you do more together? Secondly, Halford and all 2023 focused a lot on the importance of self-change and how you are responsible for your relationship flourishing. You can't leave it all with your partner to do all the work, and vice versa. It's only by you wanting to change that something good will happen. Finally, the study mentioned that couples benefit from the focusing on the relationship itself and doing nothing else. Therefore, if you and your partner think about the relationship for 12 hours and try to improve it, then there will be benefits, which I think is really interesting. And you could even half of that time to see some benefits, like spending 6 hours total working on each of these six areas mentioned earlier. Conclusion. So at the end of this social psychology episode, I think that we can all admit that a relationship can flourish for a lot of different reasons. And I know a good chunk of this episode has been a common sense. Like, we know that good communication is important. But this is what I like coming back to. Just because we know something doesn't mean we're always going to follow it. Like, I know so much mental health advice. It did not mean that I followed it for quite a long time, which is really bad, but hey, I'm not perfect. Therefore, whenever you get into a relationship, and after a while you get concerned that it is filled up with a sense of sameness and dullness, then use these six areas to kickstart your relationship again and to make it exciting. Or, better yet, actively think about these six areas before your relationship even gets to that stage. Personally, I always find relationship content fun to think about, because even though I have no experience whatsoever to draw on, it gives me a knowledge that I can use in the future. And I always like how this area of social psychology we can apply to our own lives to improve our relationships, so that we can be happy, healthy, and experience more joy in the future. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I know I've mentioned this like quite a bit, but this is just such a fun area because we get to apply it to our lives. We get to think about human relationships, which is so common. All of us have them, whether they're friendships, romantic relationships, and the like. Like, this is just such an important area that I always like that I can do podcast episodes on it because I learn a lot. Hopefully you guys do. And I'm just really, really happy that I have this amazing podcast to actually do this sort of content for. Mainly because I did forget it was episode 250 last week though. Mainly because I had this file naming problem. So yeah, so that was a massive problem and a slight error on my part. But thank you all of you for listening. And because I've only got 45 minutes before I go out, I really need to get going and wrap up this podcast. Also because I can't actually do the podcast tomorrow like I normally do because I'm out at a theatre. And we do this as sort of a personal update. But I want to mention it because it's a theatre in London. And the show is they do this court case, and then you have to vote, right, if the defendant is guilty or not guilty. So that's actually going to be a lot of fun, and I'm excited. And as always, if you know someone who would enjoy today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out Psychology of Relationships, The Social Psychology of Friendships, Romantic Relationships, and more. Available from all major ebook retailers, you can get the paperback and the hardback in the paperback stores, and you can also get the AI audiobook from selected audiobook retailers. And you can also become a patron at patreon.com/thepsychologyofpodcast. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day and I'll see you next time.